Welcome back to another episode of the Scared Stiff Horror Podcast. I'm your host, Doug Plumatello, a filmmaker from Connecticut and writer and director of the upcoming horror film Halloween Candy. On today's episode, we have a special guest. JR is a filmmaker and podcaster who I have worked with on over a dozen films over the last several years. He's a passionate horror fan and discusses the genre on his podcast, Three Corners of Horror. We discuss many things in this interview, including his introduction and influences in the genre, as well as the challenges of being an independent filmmaker. So sit back and enjoy our interview with JR. We are joined here right now with JR from Horror Fiend TV. How are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing good, man. Excited to come on your podcast. I mean, we go way back, so it's going to be fun to sit down and talk horror with you.
Yeah. For those who don't know, me and JR have been doing, about a dozen horror movies in the last several years?
Yes.
I think maybe about 6 years since you joined the Scared Stiff team. And I'm so glad that I met you all those years back.
Oh, me too. I mean, it's funny because, working with your uncle, and then he introduced me to, and Alyssa, and then, we got into doing films together. And it's been a fun ride, and hey, the ride's not over. We still got a lot of years to go.
Absolutely. JR here is a talented filmmaker, a podcaster, and a horror movie aficionado.
Yes. I'm glad you have that put. For those who don't see, Doug has a Halloween poster behind him, and I am a massive Halloween fan, and I'll keep saying it, except for the trilogy that just came out. I will not talk about those.
Oh, man. It's so funny you bring that up. The amount of times that Halloween Ends has come up in one of my podcasts, usually for a bad reason. Oh, my gosh. It's about 80% of my podcast. Somehow, some way, Halloween Ends has come up in conversation.
Oh. I just hate that movie. I hate that whole trilogy. I mean, poor Michael.
See, I know I'm in the minority. I really liked Halloween 2018, and I absolutely loved Kills. At the time, and even now more so, it seems like the general opinion is that Kills wasn't good. But I still stand by, I love that movie. I rewatched it several times last year. But that makes my disappointment of Ends even greater, because I was disappointed. My hate of that movie was heightened by the fact that I loved the predecessor so much, and it was such a letdown.
Well, it was interesting because, like, you had the first Halloween 2018 was a reintroduction of the reset of the, Halloween universe. I mean, they basically canceled everything, I think, after the first one, and because Halloween 2, the original, wasn't part of the whole series, part of the trilogy. And then the second film, Halloween Kills, was just seeing Michael go all out, Michael being what Michael is. And I think that's what happened when we got to Halloween Ends. We're like, really? This really? I mean, what? And to have Michael Myers living in the sewers, just so watered down, was just, it kills me.
I can't even get started. We'll table that discussion for another day. So what was your introduction to horror movies?
Actually, Halloween. The first horror movie I watched was Halloween. And I remember, sitting there with my family, and here we are just watching a horror movie that we didn't think anything of it. And the thing that captivated me with that film was just as a filmmaker, cinematography is always going to be the number one thing you look at films. And just the way John Carpenter cut that film, the way he recorded with the wide shots, and then the score. And, after that, it's just like, watched a lot of 80s. And the 80s were horror movies that were basically built on, the slashers. They weren't meant to be serious. There wasn't, really a storylines until, Freddy Krueger came out. He was the one with an actual pretty good storyline background. And it's just, I love horror. For me, horror is, out of all, and, I'm sure I'll get some hate for this, but out of all the different type of movies there are, horror movies is the one that's the most creative and gives the directors and the writers the creative freedom to do whatever they want. They're not tied down like action films. Hey, I'm not a big Fast and the Furious guy, because same movie and over again is just, let's do a different car scene. But for me, is this like horror movies is just so, they're so fun to watch because even though you'll see one that's been, you can say, all right, I've seen this before, it's been done. They'll try to do it in a different way to add a different twist. And it's just, it's ever growing like genre that unfortunately doesn't get well respected. I mean, when's the last time a horror person has ever won an Oscar?
Right.
That's that for me is just a tragedy because there are great performances in horror films. And unfortunately, they don't get the love and respect. I mean, Jamie Lee Curtis won for Halloween, but in reality, it's just like, I mean, she went up there. I think she did win for Halloween Kills. It Ends, if I'm correct, because she beat Angela Bassett, right?
Well, it wasn't for Ends.
It was for a horror one, right?
It was that Everything All at Once, and I'm butchering the name. But, yeah, the only two I could think of that won an award was Anthony Hopkins. Maybe he didn't win the acting, but I know that movie won an Academy. And then Kathy Bates won Best Actress for Misery. But you're right. They're, you know, two in, what, 96 years or however many Oscars they've been. So, yeah.
That's a shame.
Yeah, but it's such a unique genre. You know, how many times have you seen, and I love the movie, American Pie, but how many times have you see somebody wear an American Pie hoodie? Or, you know, like horror genre, people will wear a killer on their shirt. It's one of the few genres that people will wear gear for. And it's an instant conversation starter when they see another horror fan. You know, another horror fan sees it and it's, you know, it's kind of like a uniform in a way. It's like a code. That, yeah, I get it too. And then, you know, I've had so many conversations with people just because they were wearing like a Friday 13th hat, you know, and instantly you have that bond. And I find not too many genres have that. You know, if I see somebody in line wearing a Harry Potter shirt, nice Harry Potter shirt. Yeah. Why are you talking to me? It doesn't have that same bond.
No, it doesn't at all. And I mean, and the thing with horror is you have a favorite. I mean, how many Michael Myers shirts you see, Jason masked? You know, there's a girl I work with who, you know, I didn't know she was a horror fan until she came in one day with a hockey jersey, had Jason on it. I'm like, oh, wow, cool. You know, and then, you know, Freddy Krueger, everybody loves Freddy Krueger. Now, you know, now the big name in horror coming up is Art the Clown. And that's why I think is horror is, so, it's crazy because horror is so marketable, but yet not respected. But like you were saying, you see somebody you can recognize, Pennywise. I mean, there's so many characters, horror villain characters that are out there, and you love to see it because you're like, wow, look at this person. It's like, oh, like you were saying before. I mean, how many Hannibal shirts that you see around? I've seen quite a few, even the dolls. I'm like, wow. I mean, it is cool seeing it. I like the fact that it feels like the horror fan base is growing so much even more now.
It's funny that you mentioned iconic clowns because later this year, there's going to be another clown that's going to be introduced to an audience. Halloween Candy, I was so happy to have you involved. You're like horror family, and it was really fun to have you on set. So this leads me to our next topic. You are also a filmmaker. What got you into filmmaking?
I've always liked to, you know, I like watching horror films, and I do like writing, and the genre I like writing the most is horror. And I think the one thing about being a filmmaker is like, you want to create a character. You want to create a character that people are going to remember. You know, you have Tiny. Everybody remembers Tiny. If you don't know who Tiny is by now, you will know because Tiny is going to be next to Art the Clown one day. You'll see.
Absolutely.
But for me, it's just like, well, horror, you want to create that character. And I think that's what got me into filmmaking is like going behind the scenes, seeing how everything is done, you know, from the lighting to the different angles you take from shots to the acting. And even sometimes you sit there and you think, you know, all right, I think this shot's going to be good. All right, let's do something different. Let's do a different angle, see how this looks. And it's just like seeing what you write your own stuff too. So it's like writing and then seeing it flesh out is probably one of the greatest feelings in the world. Because you're creating something that you wrote on paper and making it more visual. Now, I mean, the process is you're constantly growing. So every film you make, you go back and you look, man, I made a mistake in this one. All right, let me try to fix it for this one. But for me is creating a character, and I'm still not done. There's so many characters I have in my head, I have on paper, that I'm just dying to bring them to screen. And that's what drives me the most, is creating a character that people will love. And, or, you know, be like, man, I hate this character, you know, he's mean and stuff. But I think that's what the great thing about horror as well, is creating characters that are memorable. And like, well, you're Tiny, it's a great character, you know, mm-hmm. And now Tiny's getting even more and more, you know, views, and it's going to get to the point where Tiny's going to be right next to Art the Clown. They're going to have a movie together.
Well, I sure hope your prediction is right. But you're right, though, about, you know, it is one of the most amazing things when you are, you know, you wrote your script, now you're bringing it to set, and now you're hearing actors performing your words and making an actual character out of it. It's something about seeing that for the first time, that something that was in your head went through your fingertips into your computer, and now it's a real character that an actor is portraying. It is an amazing thing to see. Yeah, and then again, once you edit it together, it creates it again. There's three parts of creation when it comes to filmmaking, and each time, it always feels great. Hopefully. But yeah. and my experience, especially with you, like, it's been a magical experience just seeing something that started as a figment of your imagination becomes almost a tangible experience for other people. And now other people are seeing something that started in your head. It's pretty amazing. Yeah.
Oh, it definitely is.
Yeah. Talk about some of the challenges of independent filmmaking.
Well, I think independent filmmaking right now, it's like a... It's tough because you don't have the budget of big films. And for indie filmmakers, you run into that wall where you're like, all right, this is what I want to do. But in reality, it's like, all right, this is all I can do right now. And, you know, it's always getting a crew together, making sure that there's chemistry in the crew, that, you know, you're creating something, but they see your vision as well. And it's always a fun part of the team effort, that, you know, you're sitting there watching something and somebody goes, hey, you know, what happens if, you know, they put their input and you're like, all right, yeah, that's a good idea. And it's like almost everybody gets together and they want to create this film, and it becomes more than just a passion project. And finding actors is, you know, another tough thing to do, because it's like, for indie filmmakers, sometimes you don't have that budget and that money where you have to try to compromise. And, you know, it's one of those things, it's talked about even more and more these days, especially after the strike, where, you know, actors want to get paid and indie filmmakers are in a tough spot, because we have to go and either you have to try to get funding for the film, which is, you know, a project on itself, because now you're getting money from people you don't know, and people who are trusting you to make something good. And back of your mind, you're like, man, I need to really hit a home run with this, because a lot of people are depending on me now because I'm using their money to make, you know, this film. But I think that's one of the toughest things, is finding the actors and the location. I mean, the location has always been a tough spot. And I mean, thank God for us, we have friends who are willing to open their homes for us to record, you know. Because in reality, I would love to record in an asylum. I would love to record in a hospital. But that's like the toughest thing to do, because right now, as an indie filmmaker, you don't have that financial security and that financial budget to really create what you want to create. So you're kind of limited in what you could do at the same time. But I think that's the hardest thing. I mean,
yeah, I agree with you there. That's always tough. But yeah, I think another one of the toughest things is, we're in a beautiful age when there's affordable gear, when anyone can make a movie, which is awesome. Anyone with a creative bone, or just the passion, the desire to make a movie, can make a movie, and they could post it, and they could distribute it, and people will watch it. And with YouTube and other platforms, you have an audience to distribute that will watch your movie. And it's a beautiful thing. The more people that can follow their passion, the better. But the drawback to that is, it's so much harder for someone to find your movie, because there's just so much out there. And I always find that to be a big challenge. You know, like, it's almost the back end, the business end is kind of a different brain than the creative end. You have your left brain and right brain. And the distribution and the business part of it is completely different from actually making the movie. And that's a big challenge.
Yeah, that, I haven't gotten to that point yet because, like, me and Rick, we consider ourselves still, like, amateur filmmakers, you know? And we want to get to that point where we get the distribution. And it's just one of those things where, yeah, it's like you're, you know, that's the next stage. And that's what's going to push your films even more once you get the distribution. But it's like you have to like approach it in baby steps because you don't want to jump in gung-ho. And then, you know, you don't read the fine, you know, the fine details in the contract. Or it's just, I want to get to that point. I can't wait to get to that point. And it's definitely something that, as an indie filmmaker, you look forward to the most because as you want your stuff distributed, you want people to see, you know, the work you created. And you're right. It's like anybody could do it on the phone. Anybody could do, I mean, you see it on TikTok, quick takes. I see people do like 20, 30 second films. You're like, wow, all right, that was pretty good. And it's just like, yeah, it's just a passion to do. And it's to the point where so many people are doing it, and now it gives you even more creative juices, more things like, all right, this person did this. Oh my God, that looks similar to mine. Okay, I got to switch this. I'm going to make this better. So, you know, I like the fact that you get to see so much filmmakers out there, and it's a boom. I mean, if you want to look at somebody, Damien Leone, what he did is amazing because, you know, people don't realize this Terrifier started off as part of a short film called All Hallows Eve. And he actually had a different actor playing Terrifier. So it was part of an anthology. And then he did another All Hallows Eve, which introduced Terrifier even more. And then he finally came out with the Terrifier movie. And this is an indie filmmaker who made it. And now, you know, I think that we have the third Terrifier coming out.
Yeah, it's going to be a Christmas film.
Yeah, and then basically Hollywood try to, like, constrain him into what he's going to show. And he was like, I don't need Hollywood. I'm at a point where now I could dictate how I want my movie to look. And I think as an indie filmmaker, that's what we really want. We want to show the world what was living in our head, what we wrote on paper and to big screen, and hope they appreciate everything that we're doing. And working with you, it's like you see all the behind the scenes stuff. And a lot of people don't see that. It's like you see the long hours, the times where something happens on set where, you know, the issue arises and you got to, you know, fix the issue and then, all right, let's get ready to the film. And, you know, those are the little things people don't see. And I think as an indie filmmaker, you appreciate even more because it's like a team effort. All right, let's get this done. It doesn't matter how tired we are. Let's keep pushing. And yeah, then you just anticipate to see what it looks like. It's an amazing feeling.
Yeah. The advice I always give people is, A, fill your crew with people you like to be around, A, because you're going to be around them a lot, you know, and it's important to not have ego on set. One advice that I got in college from a professor that I regret taking is he told me, never let anyone know that you don't know. And so for the longest time, you know, if there was something that arose and I didn't have the answer to, I'd quickly come up with an answer. Oh, that's because we're doing this. And I find it was way better to say, I actually am not sure. Anyway, you know, then I let people offer suggestions. Everyone in that room is wants to be a filmmaker, has a creative mind. Listen to suggestions, no ego, you know. And that I found just really helped the process out a lot. Once I let go of the ego, I let go of that bad advice I'd gotten from an old professor. No, you don't always have to know. You're learning too. You know what I mean? Like, listen to people. If you don't know, if something, a problem arises and you don't know how to get past it, listen to suggestions. Yeah. That's what your team is there for. And that's why, you know, you and Rick and Fred and the same people I've had around for years and years. Well, A, I like being around you guys, but B, you're creative and you have good ideas, you know? So surround yourself with people that you like to be around and that you trust. And that you want to foster an environment where everyone's voice can be heard and will be heard.
No, I definitely agree.
That's my advice.
And have fun. Make sure you're having fun. Like the minute, all right, cut. just relax, have fun, and joke around, and, you know, all right, let's get ready for the next scene. And I think that's one of the things I've noticed about, you know, when I film with you, is that the minute we cut, everybody's in a good mood. All right, everybody's excited, and let's get the next scene. And, you know, as we're prepping up the, you know, the environment, everybody's just getting, you know, you hear the laughs, you hear the joking around, and then once we're about to go, everybody's like, all right, let's get to work, knock out the scene. All right. And I like that. I like the fact that you create, and I totally agree with you. You have to do it with people you like. It can't be, you know, any like problems on set. Like I won't mention this. This is a couple of years ago. I was on a set and there was an issue with one of the main people on the set. It was a sound guy, and it turned into a big problem. And you're sitting there like, wow, this is, it was festering from 2 days prior that never got settled. And unfortunately it kind of stalled the movie for a couple hours until somebody came in the person's place. But yeah, in situations like that, it's like continue bringing the same people with you. And then, you know, you start adding different faces, and then when, you know, everybody becomes a family. But definitely, I totally agree. Make sure you're having fun with the people that you're working with to create the movie.
Yeah, absolutely. So what are some horror movies coming out, or I should say even horror TV shows that you're excited about?
Right now, the one I'm looking forward to this year, because I learned from last year, and we talked about this a couple times, is as horror fans, we get overly excited of certain films. And I feel like 2023, there were a lot of films that people were getting excited for. I mean, you had the Pet Sematary, you know, come out, and that ended up being a pretty bad film. And for me, I've learned that don't look at the ones that people hype. Look at the ones that are probably going to fly under the radar. Like the one I want to see the most right now is Imaginary. It's about this woman who moves back to the house that she used to live in, and her stepdaughter starts having an imaginary relationship with a bear. And it's one of these films where, you know, there's something about the bear that is evil. And it's just this whole field. And that's, I think, one of the most untouched things in horror. You don't have too many films about imaginary friends. And this is probably the second one I'm going to see in the last 2 to 3 years, because the other one was called Z. But I'm looking forward to that one the most. And, you know, I'm curious how they're going to do The Strangers, the reboot trilogy.
Right.
But there's not that many that I'm like overly excited, because I'm trying to hold myself back because I don't want to get my hopes up too much.
It's interesting because there was only two Strangers movies. Now they're rebooting it with a trilogy.
Yes.
Interesting. So the reboot is already planned for more movies than existed in the original movies.
Which I hope it make it work though, because Strangers was a great movie.
So it's not a remake. They're calling it a reboot.
It's like a reboot. Yeah, they're going to talk more about the three people without showing their faces, the family.
Okay.
So it's almost like an origin story, but they're going to push into three, which is...
So it's the same continuity as part one and then Pray at Night?
I think they're different. I think they're totally different. You know, they're kind of keeping quiet how they're going to do it, which I don't mind, because sometimes, like for example, I mean, bringing up... Buddy of ours from Halloween trilogy, the director, he did The Exorcist. It's kind of like people thought it was a reboot, but it was actually a continuation. But it wasn't as good as people thought. And I refuse to watch it because I have a thing with reboots and remakes. I mean, there are not too many good ones out there, and the ones that are out there are probably the best one for me, even though it's not a remake. It's Evil Dead 2013. I love that film.
Yeah.
Are you a fan of that one?
Yeah, no, it was fine. You know, we talked about it last week. It was good. They made it their own. You know, they weren't trying to redo what was already done. You know, they changed the tone. I think that sometimes helps a movie that's a remake, especially when it's a remake of something that's beloved, because they changed the tone of it. They weren't trying to go for the comedy elements.
Right.
So, yeah, I liked it. I'm kind of looking forward to seeing what they end up doing with the Friday 13th series and the Halloween series.
The Crystal Lake, right? Just here. Yeah.
Yeah, and I hear they're going to finally start filming it this summer. I know it was delayed a couple times, but so this summer they're going to finally shoot it, which means maybe by early next spring we'll get it.
The Friday 13th, I mean, Jason is such a great character because there's no storyline to his films. It's just basically people go to the Crystal Lake, they run into him, they all die, next movie. So it's going to be kind of, I know it's supposed to take place, I think before the other films. It's supposed to be like a prequel type. So I'm curious how they're going to pull that off.
Yeah, I assume it's going to be his camp years. You know, maybe the first episode they're going to camp, and then I assume it's going to happen however long he was at camp for. Although that would kind of limit the amount of time that the series could take place. You know, who knows? But then, you know, they referenced in the first movie like the water was poisoned and all these things happened. So maybe like Jason dies at the end of season one, and then season two is like the mom trying to stop the camp from reopening, or who knows?
Yeah.
I'm really excited to see where they go with it. My only hope is that they don't modernize it, kind of what they did with Bates Motel.
Yeah.
But I know it's more expensive to do a period piece, even though period is 70s or 60s, but I kind of hope they do it in the 60s, but I understand if they have to modernize it. So we'll see.
As long as they stick with the story. Stick with the story, stick with the character Jason. Don't, unfortunately, there's certain films that they try to have a message and they don't put the message, just focus on the characters. And there's no message to be given for Jason. Jason just kills.
Yeah. And who knows what else they do. I know Bates Motel, they introduced the brother to Norman, which when I first heard he had a brother, I'm like, how does he have a brother? It doesn't make any sense. But then I actually really like the brother character. So we'll see what happens with if they affect any of the backstory. Another character I'm excited to see is Elias, Jason's father. We've never seen him.
Yeah, that's true.
So
I totally forgot about him.
Pretty sure they're going to have him involved. You know, that's a whole character that we've only heard his name. I've never seen him. I know he was in the original script for Jason Lives. And I think in the book, they have his character in the epilogue at the end. So this is the first time I'll ever actually see Jason's father. That's kind of exciting.
Yeah, I'm curious what they're going to do with him. Are they going to make him a nice guy, or are they just going to make him an a-hole, you know, which, I mean, part of me wants him to be an a-hole because I don't want him to be a nice guy. Because then it gives the whole thing what happened to him, you know, which another thing is that'll be good to see is like what exactly happened to him. You know, is there something macabre about his disappearance? So, yeah, I agree with you. I didn't even think about that
one. Yeah. So there's a world of possibilities. The Halloween series, I'm guessing, is a few years off. You know, I think they got the rights to do the series, but I feel like we haven't heard much movement on it. I feel like that's at least a couple of years out.
Well, everybody's nervous whenever it comes to A24, because A24, they make good films, but they're known to make films that are like slow burns or have crazy wacky endings. So people are kind of holding their breaths a little bit exactly what A24 is going to do.
Yeah. And which of the six timelines do we follow, you know? Or is each season a different timeline? Like we jump back into the Curse trilogy for one season. Who knows? Who knows what happens with this?
Hey, you know, bring back Jamie. Bring back Jamie. Make pretend she never died. If you're going to do the make pretend she never died, and it's just start off. If I was to do it, I would do it right after Halloween 4. Because I really enjoyed Halloween 4. It's such an underrated film. But I know you're mixed on it, but...
No, I love Halloween 4. I had it number 3 on my Halloween retrospective a few months back.
It's a very underrated film, and it actually has a great story. And the Jamie character, for me, I think that's where they dropped the ball on when it came to... Like, we had a big discussion when we talked about, you know, the Halloween Ends and basically the Halloween trilogy. And I really wish they would have changed the storyline to bring him back to Jamie character, because if you would have had the Jamie character older with her own family, the fact you have Michael Myers locked up, potentially escaping. And then you had Lori trying to make amends with the daughter she abandoned. I think would have been a greater storyline than the storyline we were given for the new trilogy. Because you bring back a beloved... I mean, who doesn't love Danielle Harris? She's amazing.
Oh, nobody would complain seeing her back. That's for sure. Nah.
And then the rumor was, oh, she was going to be in Halloween Ends. They never brought her back in there, which is a shame. You should have. I think if they would have, if A24 listens, just do that. Bring, if you're going to reboot it a little bit, do that. Bring the Jamie character back and have her with a family now, and then you have that whole moniker of, is she still have that side of Michael that caused her to kill her stepmom?
Oh, so when you say you would follow four, so you, would you have it start with her as a killer, or would it still, she wasn't evil and it was just a momentary snap?
I would have her start out as an adult with family and okay. Basically having, you know, looking like she's living a normal life. But then when she hears about Michael, the PTSD starts kicking in. And then you could have Michael in the back of her mind, but her reliving what happened to her, what she did as a child when she killed her stepmom, because I'm sure that's something that she would have probably hid from her family. So you have more of a solid storyline, because then, like, you know, then Lori comes around, and then you have that dynamic of, because remember in Halloween 4, it starts off with her looking out the window, and that scene was amazing. You have this little girl basically looking out the window. She's adopted, new family. And the fact that mom abandoned her, it just makes for a compelling storyline. And I think I would have started with her as an adult. And then hearing that Michael's going to be moved, or just start with the PTSD, her reliving her what happened when she was a child. I think it would be a great storyline.
Yeah. The Halloween franchise is so interesting, especially for a TV show, because they could pretty much take it from any point. Like, literally, you could make a sequel to 2, a sequel to 6, a sequel to Resurrection, Rob Zombies, you know, Ends. You can go so many different directions. So
you're not a big fan of the Rob Zombie, the first one.
No, I'm not against it. You might be confusing me with somebody.
The one after that, I wasn't a fan of.
Right.
The sequel to that one.
Because you've asked me that before on your show. But
yeah.
I'm not hugely against it. You know, I think the early part is okay. The first two acts I like. I thought the third act felt rushed. And yes. I thought the characters, like the three girls, weren't developed. Like, if you swapped those girls' dialogues around with each other, nobody would know, because those three girls pretty much sounded exactly the same. Yeah, you know,
the funny part is one of those girls was Danielle Harris.
Yeah, no, for sure.
Which is crazy.
Yeah,
I agree. I like the whole backstory of Michael. You know what set him over the edge? What triggered him? And I appreciated that, because that was something that, you know, for us horror fans, when you have a character who eventually becomes a killer, sometimes the whole backstory, we kind of enjoy it being vague and we don't really think about it. But, you know, I give Rob Zombie credit for doing that part, because I enjoyed watching him as a kid. I kind of wish they would have had that whole first film of him the entire time at the hospital, not even have him escape. And then you could have had the second film, him escaping, which I think would have been more compelling, because you would have had more time seeing young Michael and his relationship with the orderly who was like taking care of him. That would have been great.
Yeah. It was a very challenging position for him to be in, Rob Zombie, because it's such a beloved classic movie that if you don't change it enough, it ends up like the 98 Psycho. It's like, why bother remaking it?
Yeah.
But if you change too much, you're going to piss off the purists. But to me, you know, I like the original mysterious, why did he turn evil, your average boy. But I don't mind. This is his own movie. It does not affect my love of the original continuity. So I didn't mind Halloween. I just thought the dialogue was bad. I felt like a lot of the dialogue was like a first pass.
Yeah.
I've mentioned this before on the show, but there's a line when young Michael's talking to his mom. It was right before she left to go strip, and he was going to go trick-or-treating. She was like, Michael, I know things have been bad, but tomorrow they get better. It's like, oh, like that. You can't add any nuance to that line. It was just, it felt like placeholder dialogue. And that's kind of my biggest critique. The dialogue was cringy in a lot of places, you know. But, and then Halloween 2, Zombies Halloween 2, I know it's, most people absolutely hate it. But then again, this is a sequel to his version of it. So it doesn't bother me. It doesn't affect that my love of the original continuities. Yeah. There's a couple continuities by this point. And one thing I like that he touched on that I don't feel like we've seen in any Halloween movies before is the effect of trauma and somebody's recovering of trauma.
Yes.
Which they really delved into. You know, she went to go see a psychiatrist. We see how it affects Annie and all the people around her, how everyone else was affected by it. And that's one thing that we've never really seen in a Halloween movie up until 2018. Although I guess we saw it in H2O as well. But
yeah,
as far as like an immediate response to trauma, because H2O was 20 years later. So we get to see, you know, the following year, how these people's lives were affected. So I really like that part. I know the popular opinion is to hate Halloween 2, but I'm okay with it. I've probably watched it at least every other year since it came out. So I'm looking at 8 or 9 viewings of that movie.
I think I only watched it twice.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I'm actually confused though, because I know like there was a big difference in the theatrical cut and then the DVDs, like the director's cut. And the entire time I thought I was watching the theatrical cut because I watched the Blu-ray is the director's cut. And then I watched Halloween 2 on Tubi this past year. And I was like, oh, so this was the theatrical cut. So I'm actually confused what things happen in the director's cut and what happens in the theatrical cut. I'm very confused which one is which.
Yeah, they did that to Megan. I don't know if you've seen the movie Megan.
Oh, yeah. Was it that different, the director's cut?
No, all I did is like, oh, it's going to be more horror. It's going to be more bloody. And the only thing they did was pull the kid's ear off. I'm like, really? This is like more horror for you? I'm like, yeah, it wasn't that much of a difference. And it like killed me. I'm like, oh, come on.
Yeah.
Megan should have been in pure radar.
Yeah. Yeah, like Rob Zombie's director's cut is like, there was enough difference in it. Like it's dramatically different. Not as dramatically different as the producer's cut of Halloween 6, but... You know, there's enough new stuff for a second viewing. You know, if you've watched one, there's enough reason to watch his director's cut if you've seen the theatrical cut. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
So tell me about Horror Fiend TV and the Three Corners of Horror. What is your podcast all about?
Well, Three Corners of Horror is our main show. It drops every Tuesday at 8 o'clock. Barring any technical difficulties, because with podcasting, you know, you always sometimes come up with something that happens. But, you know, it was originally started pre-COVID, and it was myself, Ricky Grimes, and our third host was Lindsay. So COVID hit, and unfortunately, we had to put a hold on it. When you go back and watch our first two shows, we were literally in my basement with a green screen behind us. It was like, it looked so bad because it was like, wow, this looks so amateurish. But we first started out, you know, just three people who love horror and from three different aspects of horror. So once after COVID, I reached out to my older brother, who is a massive horror fan. And we asked him, could you come on board, you know, join us on Three Corners? So he came on board. He's actually a psychologist in real life, and Joe Psychologist was his name. So we approached movie reviews in a different way because we have three different loves for horror. Like, for example, Ricky Grimes. Rick is he's an enthusiastic 80s slasher horror fan. I mean, 80s are his time. If we could do all the 80s, Rick will do all 80s, which he actually does in one of his shows. It's called a Horror Fiend Drive-In Theater. He revisits 70s, 80s, talks about, you know, all the slashes and classics. And Joe likes psychological horror, among other horrors. But his main thing was psychological horror. He actually, his first show was The Psychologist Is In, where he talked about whether a movie was horror or was psychological. And myself, I'm more of an international found footage fan. So we approached, you know, we got together like, all right, let's do some movie reviews. And, you know, Three Corners of Horror was our main show. And we talk about, you know, like we revisit old movies. We talk about the new ones. We try to stay within a, you know, 2-3 year window. And once in a while, we'll go back and visit the classes. But yeah, it's a fun show. You've been on it. And
twice.
Yeah, we just kick back and, you know, have fun, talk horror. I mean, horror is the best thing to talk about. So, you know, it's been our main show for 2-3 years running. And as, you know, when we first started our Horror Fiend TV, we just had one show. So then, you know, I told the guys, well, let's treat this like a TV channel. Let's have different shows. So we all have our individual shows. We have Sundays, Tuesdays, and Thursdays is when our schedule of shows drop. And yeah, it's been fun podcasting. I have a great time. I've met so many other podcasters, built great relationships. We've been on other podcaster shows, talk about horror. We've done live streams, but like Horror Fiend TV is just, it's a channel created for people who just love horror and love all different aspects of horror. And that's what we build it upon. Like all our shows, we have individual shows are to show our individual love for horror. Like for myself, I have a found footage show. It drops like right now I'm on every 3 weeks because we have different shows that drop in between. Rick does his, like I mentioned before, his Horror Fiend Drive-In Theater. Joe does one, and look, I horror movie fans are good, but there is a dark side of horror that I can't watch certain movies because they just go so over the top. And Joe just finds these movies, and his show is movies that F me up. And it's probably it is our most viewed series on our channel.
What is one movie that really messed you up that you couldn't watch it?
You know, it's Human Centipede is just disgusting, man.
Oh, yes.
I watched that one time, and then I went, the second one came out, and that one totally messed me up. That was so over the top, disgusting. And the thing is, there's such a huge market for people that love those movies. Yeah, there's three of them. You know, and then there was another movie that Rick recommended. I never heard of it before. It was called Necromantic, which it's necro. That's all. If you know what necro, the continuation with that is, right. That's basically what the movie's about. And it's so disturbing. And it was one of our most watched videos. And we joke around like, wow, there's a lot of sick people out there. But horror, that's the great thing about horror. There's so many subgenres in horror that you'll find a subgenre that you like. And us, we push to find every single subgenre that we like to talk about movies in that subgenre to see, you know, what movies people want us to talk about. But yeah, it's Horror Fiend TV. It was something that, you know, me, Rick started. And Rick is the workhorse. Rick does everything behind the scenes. He does a lot of editing. Joe right now is like he's the, I would say the face, the character, the persona of Horror Fiend TV. And I'm usually do most stuff, you know, like behind the scenes as well. You know, I get guests, I reach out to people, but yeah, it's a fun show right now. It's five of us. We just brought in two more people on our channel. So it's fun. It's growing. And yeah, we just love talking horror. I mean, it's amazing.
And you do these live too, right? People can comment as you're speaking and interact.
Most of our shows are recorded, pre-recorded.
I was on, people were actually.
Yeah, that was a live stream. Yeah, yeah. We do a couple of live streams when, you know, depending on the subject or if we want to talk about like a classic movie or if there's something on like an anniversary. So we try to do, we did like one live stream a month last year. So this year we're kind of switching it up because we have so many new shows that we're dropping. Where we're going to have live streams on, I think like right now we're thinking every 3 months we're going to drop a live stream. And live streams are great. I mean, we just kick back, have our drinks. I mean, there's been a couple times you could go back and watch where we got pretty tipsy on live streams and talking about horror and it's having a great time. But yeah, I mean, live streams are fun. It's fun interacting with people who watch horror. I mean, I watched so many horror movies and somebody come out, hey, have you watched this one? No, now I got to go watch the film. So that's the good thing about horror. As much as you think you watch so many films, there's always more to watch.
Yeah, one thing I discovered from doing the podcast is the horror community is so great. You know, I've met so many people doing the podcast, and we all love horror movies and talking about it. And then in doing so, it makes me even appreciate that thing that I love even more. You know, like while we do the deep dives on certain movies that I absolutely love, I'll study them for the purpose of the podcast, and it makes me even appreciate everything more, you know?
Definitely.
Yeah. So where can we find your show?
Our show is on YouTube. Horror Fiend TV is the channel. We'll be dropping on Tuesday. We're reviewing a movie called Cobwebs on Three Corners of Horror. Our special guest is Steve from Voices from the Mausoleum. It's a channel that we met with. Angel was the main person on that channel, Angel and Tasha at the time. And yeah, we were on Instagram. Somebody say, hey, I watched this movie. So we're like, hey, you know, would you want to come on our channel to review the movie with us? And that's the good thing about podcasting is that you reach out like, hey, you want to come talk horror? And people come. So it's like, we have Steve and I never seen the movie Cobwebs. I'm actually going to watch it tonight. It was a movie he recommended, so I'm looking forward to reviewing it. Because we do a scoring system of 1 through 5. And I'm probably one of the one that's like the harshest critic on our channel. So, because, you know, I love story-driven horror. And if a movie tries to be a story-driven horror and it falls flat, you know, I like to call out. Because when I was going to school, one of my teachers told me is, whenever you critique something, be honest and tell the truth. So don't BS it, nobody, because if you BS it, you're not only are you helping the person improve, but you're not helping yourself improve at the same time. So I have, when I watch certain movies, I have, you know, like expectations. If the story falls flat, we will call it out. We actually, there's been plenty of times where we actually remade movies at the end of our reviews on how we would change the storyline.
Well, that's a cool idea. Yeah, it definitely helps. I know it's nicer to hear good feedback, but it's more helpful to hear bad feedback, I find.
Yes.
I remember when I was in film school, there was people that either A, didn't want to criticize, either A, they wanted to get out of class earlier, or B, it's like, hey, if I don't criticize his, he won't criticize mine. But I find, you know, but I find it, we're not learning by doing that. It's got to be honest. Because
sometimes you go back and watch some of your first films, you're like, man, I would have did this differently. Yeah. Damn, I can't believe I pulled this off. Damn, by our third film, you know, and Alyssa, and I'm glad she pointed this out to us, because we used to just, all right, let's get the film done because we were worried about time. And that's one of the things that you learn as a filmmaker is that, listen, if you don't get the shot in, don't worry about it. There's another day. And sometimes you have to wait another day to do the shot because you want the current shot to look good.
Yeah.
So one of the things that Alyssa told us is, and I appreciated her for telling us this, she was that, you know, when you're doing a scene, you have to make sure that one scene, you do three different angles of that one scene before. And then when you move to the other person talking, do the same thing. And we weren't doing that. And then we started doing that. Like, wow, just those little things was a tremendous help, because now you're like, all right, now I have more stuff I could use when I do the editing, instead of having that straight one shot appearance. Now I could do this shot over the shoulder. And I think that helps a lot, because if she wouldn't have said that, we would have kept doing the way we were doing it. And I appreciate the fact that we got called out on that, and it helped us. And, you know, for me, I showed one of our films to somebody else, and they were like, oh, well, if you did the lighting different here, I was like, all right, I see your point. And because you do everything like from your vision, but then when you see somebody's other vision and their point, you're like, all right, you're right, I could have did this. So I think definitely just being an honest, you know, critic you know, helps in so many ways.
Yeah, that goes back to what we said earlier, no ego.
Right.
If you ask for criticism, you let somebody watch something, you can't expect them just to be like, oh, it was great, it was awesome. Like, let them give feedback and listen to it.
Yes.
No? But some people, I tell you, the amount of times that somebody would show me one of their projects and I'm watching it and I, you know, give them my notes because they're asking for it. I don't just give notes if no one is asking for it. But if someone gives it to me and be like, let me know what you think. Yeah, I'm going to be honest. I'm trying to help them. And sometimes people will fight everything. I was like, well, fine. It was perfect. Don't ask me next time. You know, not trying to sound like a dick, but like if you're asking me for advice, you know, you got to be open to accepting some criticism.
Yeah, we had one person reach out to me through Facebook, and he's actually a distributor. So he was like, hey, could you guys do me a favor and review this film? Now, it was an international film. I think it was an Argentinian film about a serial killer. It was actually, the film had a lot of potential. And I had told him, I said, listen, we're going to be totally honest on our review. If we're not honest with you, then there's no point in us reviewing it. But are you willing to hear our honesty on the film? And he was like, yeah. And we broke down that film so much because there was so much of that film that we felt like there was a lot of potential, but certain things of the film weren't done that would keep the viewer hooked. And a couple weeks back, you know, I'm on this, I think we're on an indie filmmaker channel together. And I have people reach out to me. Hey, could you guys review my short film? So me and Rick are in the process of starting another show where we're going to spotlight indie horror filmmakers. So we're going to review their show, their shorts. And then if they want to come on to talk about it, they come on and talk about it. But, you know, our concern is, you know, we're going to be totally honest. We're going to review your film like we would review any other film. And if that's what you want, then, you know, we're happy to review the films. But we're going to start looking at more at indie horror filmmakers, too, because since we're indie horror filmmakers, we want to help others and, you know, put their work out there and, you know, introduce them to our viewers and, you know, get their fan base up too, and get our fan base up, of course. But, you know, spotlight people who are doing the same thing we're doing, you know, trying to make a indie horror film and pushing to get bigger and bigger in it. So yeah, definitely. I love critiquing.
Yeah. And you're right. You have to be honest, because if you say, yeah, this movie was great, and someone checks it out and that wasn't really great, and there goes some of your credibility. If you sugarcoat something or say, oh, I liked it when you didn't, you know, so you're right. You just got to be honest. And as an artist, you know, when you put something out to the world, some people aren't going to like it. I know my movies, some people are going to hate it. You know, it's the way things are. Some people are going to love it. Some people are going to hate it. You got to take it. You know, I remember the first time I ever got a comment on one of my movies on YouTube, like back in 2008, and they hated it. I was like, I got tensed up, and I'm like, what? You know, but, you know, and sometimes some criticism is like, I wish I can get my 10 minutes back or something stupid. But if someone says, hey, the lighting wasn't good or the sound wasn't good, okay, that's good criticism because I can improve now. Like, so, you know, so sometimes you have to ignore some criticism when it's just nasty. But if someone's giving you constructive criticism, you got to take it.
Definitely gotta take it. You gotta, like, one of the things that, like, one of the films I did, I showed somebody and they're like, wow, the lighting here wasn't great, so you can't really tell what was going on. I went back and looked, I was like, wow, you're 100% right, you know. So I went and started looking at like different videos of how to set up the lighting, how to, you know, improve lighting, different angles to take certain shots. And that's the great part about being critiqued, is you go back and you're like, all right, let me fix these things. Even like if somebody goes, wow, like you were saying with the Halloween, that the dialogue was bad in that scene. Somebody says that to one of your films, you're like, all right, you know, now I know I got to work a little bit more on my dialogue. I'll make sure next time around either put good dialogue in it or I remove it where it's not needed.
Yeah. But don't get me wrong, though. Just because someone does give constructive criticism doesn't mean you need to take it. Like sometimes right. you get advice from people that mean well, but yeah, it's not really the way I want to go with this. So you don't always have to take the criticism, but right. you have to, when I say take it, you have to listen to it and accept it without being pissed off. That's what, to clarify, that's what I mean when I say take it. Doesn't mean you have to do what they're saying.
Right.
Just be open to listen to it.
Definitely.
Yeah. So I can keep talking to you forever, but it's time to move to the next part of our show. Are you familiar with our 13 questions segment?
No, I am not.
You haven't listened to one of my podcasts yet? Oh,
I have, but I'll be honest with you, when it comes to stuff like the 13 questions, because we do that to the people that we bring on. Like, we did it to you. Hey, you know, and I would hit you up like a day before. Hey, make sure you come with your top 10 horror list.
Okay. Well, this one's a little different. So what our 13 questions is it's 13 questions. They're random. Could be about anything. It's to put you on the hot seat. And there's no wrong answers. Just whatever comes to your mind. So I purposely didn't give you these in advance. This way, it would be really off the top of your head without really thinking about it. So don't worry about it. They're not too hard.
Sounds good.
I think you'll do good.
Oh, hit me.
All right. 13 questions with JR. Question number one. Favorite candy?
Favorite candy? Almond Joy.
Favorite filmmaker?
John Carpenter.
Favorite horror movie?
Halloween. The original.
Favorite non-horror movie?
The Lord of the Rings franchise.
Walking zombies or running zombies?
Oh, I love running zombies. Sorry, Rick.
Since you guys had a debate about this on your show in the past.
We have, where I prefer the running zombies over the walking zombies because I feel like you can get away from a walking zombie a lot quicker.
Right. Favorite horror villain?
Favorite horror villain? Michael Myers. He's my top dog.
Favorite horror remake?
Evil Dead 2013.
Horror movie that most needs a sequel.
Horror movie that most needs a sequel. Oh, that's a good one. Let me see. Most needs a sequel. See, they had a prequel, but I would love to see a sequel to The Thing.
If you can remake any horror movie, what would it be?
The Halloween, the first Halloween. The new trilogy, I would remake the first one off the bat.
So how would you approach the 2018 version differently?
I would, like I was saying, I would do it right after a continuation of Halloween 4. I will have an adult Jamie with her own family. Not thinking about the past of Michael Myers. Because obviously, you know, you would assume she went to therapy after the incident at the end of Halloween 4. But I would do it where she's still living in Haddonfield. And the fact that Michael Myers is going to be transferred and it's all over the news. And she's basically had it blocked from her mind about Michael. And as soon as Michael Myers news that he's going to be transferred, knock on the door, here's Lori, mom, come in. So I would do it because of that relationship of the daughter who was abandoned by the mother, and now the mother wants to make amends by trying to save the daughter.
Wow, so Lori waited 30 years before entering Jamie's life.
Yes.
Wow, that's interesting. Maybe you'll have a shot at this during the TV series. Who knows what direction they go.
Yeah, give me a call. I would love to do it.
Proudest moment in your filmmaking career?
Proudest moment in my filmmaking career? Wow. I mean, I'll be honest. That's a tough one because I feel like every time I'm on set, whether it's something I'm doing or somebody else is doing, like you or, you know, Robert Sig. I like when you hire me, but you know, it's tough. It's I'm always proud because you. All right, it's going to be cheesy. Every time I'm on a film set, I'm just proud. It's for me. It's just it's a blessing. It's something amazing to watch a film being made. And every time I'm on a film set, it's like I'm learning something new. And for me, it's like I'm proud of every film set I was on because, like I said, it's a blessing to be there. So that's cheesy. I know I should say one, but I got to be honest.
No, like, I totally understand. Yeah. Absolutely understand. Next question. What is one thing that would surprise people about you?
One thing that surprised people about me. Wow, that's a tougher than the horror questions. I'm very humble. I'm a very humble person. I'm not one to glow about anything. I appreciate everything every opportunity I've had, every opportunity I'm given. And I would say that, I mean, I could come off as a joker, serious and stuff, but I'm a very, very humble person. And, you know, I appreciate everything that's been given to me, every opportunity I've had. You know, even having this, you know, the Horror Fiend TV, you know, channels, like it's something that, you know, Rick would be like, oh, it was, you know, JR's brainchild. No, you know, this is something that we did all together. And, you know, I appreciate everybody that's around me and the support I have and just being humble. I mean, I think you have to be humble in everything you do in life. And I think you have to take everything to the point where you have to appreciate the moment. You have to appreciate everything that's given to you, every opportunity that appears, and you just have to kind of lay back and watch everything and just appreciate everything that's in front of you. I went a little deep there. Sorry.
No, that's great. That's those are the things we try to pull out of people for the Scared Stiff Horror Podcast. Good answer. Question number 12, best advice you've ever received.
Best advice I ever received. To not be too. All right. So when I was going to fiction writing class and I created this story, and the story took place on Earth after a volcano eruption, and gave it to my professor, and he looked at it with the most serious look on his face, and he's a jokester. Tim Parrish is his name. Love the guy. He looked at me and he says, I would change this whole story. And I, why? He goes, because you wrote something that you need to explain too much. And when you're doing story writing, give yourself every opportunity to be as creative as possible. So he told me, take this story and put it in space or another planet. Give yourself the freedom to be able to open your mind to be as creative as possible, instead of creating something that's going to be locked down in too many questions. So be as creative as possible. Show me what you could do creatively. And I wrote the story, and it's one of Rick's favorite stories I've ever written. It's not published yet because that's another hurdle I'm looking to do. Because, you know, I do want to be an author, and that's something I'm striving to do as well. And, you know, being writing, it's like filmmaking. Sometimes you got to take that jump, and I'm still in the process of jumping off the ledge a little bit, but yeah, that's the best advice he gave me, is do something where you open your mind, be as creative as possible without having to be restricted and constrained to having to answer questions about plot holes or, oh, this is not realistic. You can't write this. So yeah, for me, just be creative as possible and open your mind. Don't constrain yourself to anything.
Nice. Your last question, sadly. If you can go back in time, what advice would you give a young JR?
All right, so this is a quick story that has to do with my writing. So when I graduated from high school, I worked a summer job at where my mom worked. I worked for the director of a Head Start program. So he goes, hey, just make copies to keep yourself busy. So I sat there and I wrote a story. Just started freestyling a whole story. So he came out and he goes, what are you doing? I said, I'm writing a story. So I wrote the story. He looked at it and he was like, you know, you have a lot of talent. You know, you're a good writer, and you know, I think you should go to school for it. And I never did. So, you know, for me, it's like, if I could go back in time, I would tell young JR that, listen, you know, one of the greatest lines in a movie was Bronx Tale. And Robert De Niro was with his son. And he has this line and he goes, the worst thing in the world is wasted talent. You can have all the talent in the world, but if you don't do anything with it, you just wasted it. And that's the advice I would give anybody is, if you have a talent for something, just do it. I mean, I wish I could go back and would I be in a different place? Yeah, maybe, you know, would I be an author? Possibly. You know, I could have, you know, I eventually did go back to school, did go back to school for writing. So I did get that done, but you know, it was like 20 something years later. But the advice I would give to myself is, if you have a talent for something, don't waste it. Take your talent and see what you could do with it and strive and reach for the stars. I mean, we all have a talent that we each were born with, and it's just like to waste it. And unfortunately, life happens. And, you know, that's the thing. Life happens. And I guess when life happens, you can't put that talent to the side. You have to keep working on it. And that's the advice I'd give the younger me.
That's great. See, that's the beauty of 13 questions. We start with almond and coconut covered candy, and we end with amazing, insightful life advice.
Dang it. Yeah. That was a tough one.
So, unfortunately, that is the end of our show. So, where can we find you on the interwebs?
Well, there's on Facebook, we're on Horrorfiend TV. You could catch me on Instagram. You could catch me on Twitter. But if you want to see where I definitely go on Horror Fiend TV on the YouTube, subscribe, like us. And yeah, join us in conversation. If there's some movie you want us to do, definitely hit us up because we're always looking for new movies to do. We're looking to open up the show even more, invite more people. So if you're a podcaster, you're more than welcome to, you know, come by, let us know. If there's a movie you want us to review with you, come on. You know, being a podcaster is fun too because you meet other podcasters and now you become part of this family where now it's just like, all right, let's continue to push each other and grow as a team. Because even though you have your separate channel, you're still rooting for the other channels to get more subs. So yeah, I mean, definitely if you're a podcaster, just let me know and we'll have you on our show, whichever show you want. You could go on YouTube, check out the channel. There's a playlist with all our shows. So pick a show you want to be on.
That's another great advice, what you just mentioned, is that a lot of times, especially in a competitive field, some people, they misunderstand and they think that someone else's success is your failure. But that's not the case. You know, you should want everyone that you come in touch with to succeed. We all want to succeed. And, you know, wishing success to somebody else or sharing other creators' work, it only helps them out. It only helps everybody out. So it's a great mindset to have. Just we all can succeed together. It doesn't have to be one or the other.
It's all about having fun. And horror is a great topic to talk about and something that you will never get tired of talking horror.
Absolutely. So we'll have to have you back. This was fun.
Oh, definitely.
All right, JR, this has been a great conversation, and I'm looking forward to seeing you again on set real soon.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me, and definitely looking forward to next time, and curious what 13 questions you're going to throw at me next time.
Absolutely. All right, take care.
All right.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Scared Stiff Horror Podcast. Be sure to check back next week and every week for discussions about the genre that we love. Follow us on Instagram at scared_stiff_films. Thanks again for listening, and see you all next week.